Right now, we want to talk about the sniper attacks in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding suburbs, Maryland and Virginia. So far, 8 people have been shot since last Wednesday night. Apparently, they were chosen at random. 6 of the victims are dead. The latest shooting critically injured a 13-year-old boy. He's fighting for his life now at Children's Hospital here in D.C. Today, many anxious parents accompanied their children to school or kept them at home. Even adults in the area are increasingly anxious. During the morning and evening rush hours, the times of most of the previous attacks, many people admit to feeling nervous about a routine trip to the grocery store or the gas station. Given the statistics, this may not be entirely rational, but it is nevertheless very real. For the next 15 minutes, we'll talk about how we might better cope with this kind of fear. Do these attacks leave you anxious, even if you're far away? How can communities deal with this kind of crime? If you've lived in neighborhoods that have been through criminal trauma, we'd like to hear from you. Our telephone number is 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Edward Hollowell, and he's a psychiatrist and a specialist on anxiety. He's the director of the Hollowell Center in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and the author of Worry, Hope, and Help for a Common Condition. And he joins us on the phone from Boston. Dr. Hollowell, it's good to speak with you again.
Nice to be with you again. Thank you.
Boston is not all that far away from Washington, D.C. Have the sniper attacks resonated with people where you live?
Oh, you bet they have. In fact, this morning, I have 3 kids, age 13, 10, and 7, and my 10-year-old son asked, you know, what's going on? And as we drove into school, people walking into school were talking about it. So I think it absolutely is something that the whole country becomes aware of pretty quickly.
Yeah. What was the feeling about it when you talked about it?
Well, I said to my kids, I said, you know, yes, this is another example of danger that's real and that's out there, but you got to know that lots of very concerned people are trying to protect us, and we need to sort of band together. My line is never worry alone. Try to get the facts and then make a plan, and we're trying to make a plan, and the bad things happen when people become isolated and start worrying alone. That's when your imagination runs wild, and that's when you make bad decisions.
Yeah, the hair starts rising up at the back of your neck, and you sort of feel like a target on the back.
Exactly. When you're in isolation, we all tend to be paranoid, and that's why we need each other. We need to sure, there is some real danger out there, mm-hmm. no doubt about it, but I think we need to, we have a way, when we worry together, of finding a rational position as opposed to becoming, irrational.
I wanted to play a piece of tape for you and the listeners. At a press conference yesterday, the man in the middle of the storm, Montgomery County Police Chief Charles Moose, spoke directly to parents in the area and addressed the difficulties in explaining the attacks to their children.
I would hope that the parents that are paying attention to this while they're at work or while they're at home will understand that they do have a job. That when those kids get home, they've got to engage them, they've got to talk to them, they've got to explain this mess to them, but they need to hear it from their parents. And they need to hear it in a way that makes sense. Let them know that the parents still love them, that they're safe at home, and that we're going to carry on because that's what we do in this country.
Ned Hollowell, what did you make of that advice?
Oh, I think it's very good advice. Again, the theme of don't worry alone. Bear in mind that as parents, you may be more worried, more alarmed than your kids, and you don't want to sort of force your kids to be worried. Little kids may not really need to know an awful lot about this. So go follow your children's lead. Sort of don't impose your adult worry, which is from a whole different perspective, upon your children. But as they ask questions and as they're concerned, let them know that the grown-up world is working very, very hard to protect them and to make it a safe place. There are real dangers out there. You can't deny that. But on the other hand, kids tend not to have perspective, and it's our job as grown-ups to sort of give them perspective and also to let them know that we are taking concrete steps to protect them, and you can tell them exactly what those steps are.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And Patricia joins us now from Delray Beach in Florida.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say that the day when attacks happened on September 11, my kids were understandably very nervous, as were we all. And I was trying to reassure them, telling them, you know, we live in a very small town in Florida. Nobody's ever heard of this town. There's no way, you know, we can be targets of anything. And then the next day in the news, it came out that 9 of the terrorists had been living in Delray Beach, 4 of them within 3 blocks of our house. And there was this huge irrational fear. We knew they were gone. They were dead, the ones who had been living by us. But there was still this irrational fear that they had been here, they had been so close, that it almost could have been us, that why didn't we do something? Just wanted to point out the irrationality of it, that, you know, fear grips you. I mean, you know, we were all understandably very upset, but this, that I was trying to reassure my kids, and then they looked at me and said, Mom, you know, they were here.
Yeah.
And
Doctor,
if I were anywhere in Maryland, I my groceries would wait. We would be ordering pizza.
Ned Hollowell?
Yeah, the thing about toxic worry, you know, excessive worry, and it's always hard to say when is it excessive, but it becomes excessive when it takes over your imagination. It's a disease of the imagination. And the imagination can take real danger, as we're living with now, and turn it into more than it possibly could be. My daughter, Lucy, who's only 13, said, Dad, you know, you need to tell grown-ups and kids there is danger out there. There is something to be afraid of. But at the same time, tell them don't hold back on life. In other words, don't let these dangers paralyze you. And I think that's wonderful advice. We just can't let the dangers of this modern world paralyze us and go totally into hiding.
But by the same token, I mean, and I appreciate your answer, and we all did try to get back to our normal lives. You know, my feeling is, okay, this person will get caught sooner or later. Why should I take any unnecessary, you know, why not stay away from the grocery store and the dry cleaners and just make sure I'm inside a parking lot when I get out of my car and inside my garage when I get out of my car?
I guess it's a question as it was after September 11th. Where do you draw the line? Do you not take an airplane flight that you're planning to take? Do you not go shopping? Do you just stay indoors? Do you go into the basement? I mean, after all, someone could shoot through the windows. I mean, it's a question of where do you draw the line? And my suggestion is that's a decision best made with others. Don't make it alone, because your imagination tends to go into catastrophically negative direction. So you're better off to make this decision in discussion with other people that you respect rather than alone.
But sometimes other people fuel those fears even more than the way you felt.
That's true. And so sometimes this advice will lead you to perhaps to overreact. I still think as a general rule of thumb when it comes to managing anxiety, never worry alone is very solid advice. And then step two is get the facts, and step three is make a plan. Try as best you can to get the facts. Now, in this situation, we don't know who this person is. And so, you know, so there are some facts we don't have, but as best we can, we know that there are people protecting us. We get advice from the police and others as to what areas are particularly dangerous. Try to gather facts and then make a plan based on those facts and based on not worrying alone.
But let me ask you bluntly, and I do appreciate what you're saying, and you know, we did try to get back to life as soon as normal, but if it were your wife or your daughter, and they were living in that area, would you tell them to lay low for a couple of days?
You know, honest to goodness, not living in Washington or Virginia right now, I don't want to presume to answer, but I would take them to school, and I would, the schools are in lockdown right now, so they would remain indoors when they're at school. But I would try to follow my daughter Lucy's advice and not hold back on life, because there's one person out there who is crazed and terribly dangerous.
Patricia, thanks very much
for
the phone
call.
Thank
you very much.
Okay. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email question we got about relative risk. Every day in any metropolitan area, writes John from Farmington Hills, Michigan, people are killed in traffic accidents, yet almost no one hesitates to ride in a car. But whenever there's publicity regarding a criminal act that's no more likely to recur than a traffic fatality, people take extreme steps to reduce the risk to themselves and their families. Why don't people do a better job of assessing relative risk?
That's a wonderful question, and he points up just what I'm trying to get at, that the imagination can run wild. When something unusual happens, and sad to say, these kinds of events are becoming more and more usual, but when something out of the ordinary happens like this, we our imaginations catastrophize it, and we think, oh my goodness, it's not safe to go outside. Whereas, as the writer points out, people, thousands of people are killed every day in traffic. And we don't all, you know, refuse to get in our automobiles at the start of every day. There's something about the unusualness of it, the complete lack of control we seem to have over it, that activates our imaginations in a catastrophic way. And that's why we need each other to kind of regain our senses and, sure, take reasonable precautions, but don't totally hold back on life. Don't go into hiding because of it.
Our next caller is Steve, who joins us on the line from Spotsylvania County in Virginia.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Steve.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make a quick comment on how, I guess, you know, people around me and where I live are reacting. And we were on alert for the past 5 years with the Lisk Silver murders of those poor young girls.
Yes.
And we have daughters. I have three daughters. And everybody who has children at that age, you know, we're spotting for cars and things of this nature during that whole time. And we were semi-relieved when the person out of Columbia, South Carolina, was linked to this. Unfortunately, he killed himself, but in a sense. But, you know, it was linked to him. But now this shooting at Michael's outside the mall area has people back on alert, you know, looking for, spotting trucks of that description and calling into the local police. So I think our county right now, and I can't speak for everyone, but we're back on alert and saying, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, Dr. Hollowell, it's not just this area. As Steve says, Spotsylvania County's already been traumatized by another kind of crime. This summer, all of the various communities involved in some of the abductions of children, this is not limited to this one case, regrettably.
Oh, not at all. I mean, it predates September 11th, certainly, the shootings in Columbine and the other school killings. The past decade or so has seen an increase in these terrorist random acts of violence. I think it has to do with the sort of disconnected, fragmented nature of our society. There's a lot of just angry, isolated people out there. And to me, the larger message is, in our speeded up, electronically mediated world, we really need to make major efforts to reconnect, to solidify those human bonds that create what we call community and that tend to create not only the feeling of safety, but the reality of safety. People, as they become marginalized, tend to become enraged, and then the extreme of those tend to do the violent acts. But if there's a message to us all, it's to connect, it's to reach out, it's to try to hold one another and create a community that's real, where we don't exclude people and have people sort of driven to the outskirts of rage and violent behavior.
Steve, hang in there.
Thank you.
Okay. See if we can squeeze in one more call. Megan joins us from Montgomery County in Maryland.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, I'm right around the shootings, and I'm going from one office to another, and I'm actually passing by three of the different sites. And it struck me with your conversation of the recommendation to keep living your life. And at one of the sites, it just really struck me where the woman was vacuuming out her van. There are a bunch of flowers near the site, but people were getting gas, the roads are clogged. So whereas Thursday, when it was happening, it was really a ghost town. Hmm. Now it seems like people are doing just that. I mean, we've got to go to work, we've got to put gas in our cars, and it seems like people are trying to create some kind of balance.
That's wonderful to hear. I mean, that really is what we need to do. It's not to say there's no danger. There is danger, but we just can't let it, as my daughter says, lead us to hold back on life. We've got to live, and we've got to hold together and help one another out.
Megan, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
So long. And Ned Hollowell, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Dr. Edward Hollowell is a psychiatrist and a specialist on anxiety. He's the director of the Hollowell Center in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and the author of Worry, Hope, and Help for a Common Condition. And he was kind enough to join us by phone from Boston, Massachusetts. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.